Well, thank you very much, Susan, who I'm speaking through this microphone. I want to start by thanking those of you who have been a great support to me on my trip to Nepal that I did back in November. I'm going to try and do two things at once today, report about what that trip was like, but also speak on the topic that's been given to me. So it may be quite hard to do, but all the pictures are from the trip that I did in November. 1 week cycling for the Edinburgh Medical Missionary Society to raise money for a palliative care unit to be run in a Christian hospital in Nepal. And the second week back visiting Tansen, a place I'd lived 30 years ago, working for United Mission to Nepal. When I signed up to do the cycle ride, I was sent this form to welcome me to the challenge. And on looking at page one, you will immediately realize that the word challenge appears many times, I think five or six times there. And there is no doubt that it is a challenge. And perhaps we need challenges in our lives like that. And perhaps we need the challenging verses or sayings of Jesus to make us move ahead in our Christian lives. The ride was challenging, first of all, financially, in that we had to each raise over £3,000. And many of you helped with that. Many of you gave generously and bought things from our stall, etc. And I'm very grateful to you for that support. Together with the other 12 riders, we raised between £40,000 and £45,000, which is enough to build this palliative care unit, the plans of which were shown to us when we were there. Such a cycle ride is also a challenge physically, in that you have to be ready to climb hills on your bicycle. Nepal is not known for being a flat country, as you may know, and we, at our height, we climbed up to a height of 2,488 meters, in fact, which is something over 8,000 feet, and then descended to nearly sea level the next day. So it was quite demanding physically. It was demanding and challenging also in that we didn't take the most direct route. So if we had gone by the Kathmandu to Pokhara Highway, which is this, the journey would only have been 200 kilometers. And in fact, it took us 350 kilometers to get there. The reason being that we went round the Kathmandu Valley, turned south, over the high mountains, down to the plains, along near the Indian border, back into the mountains, toward Pokhara, took a side route up into the mountains, back down, and then into Pokhara. The route, if we had traveled by the main broad highway, would have been a bit like this. Douglas, if you can... And having seen the highway and the amount of traffic on it, especially the number of buses and lorries, it's no wonder that it seemed advisable to go by the narrow way instead. Thank you, Douglas. I think that would do. So the kind of roads we were traveling on were more like this, much quieter, steeper, a lot of bends in them, not much traffic, but generally much safer. Jesus said, as we heard, "Go in by the narrow gate, for the wide gate has a broad road which leads to disaster, and there are many people going that way. The narrow gate and the hard road lead out into life, and only a few are finding it." Seemed to be a technical hitch. There we are. So in what ways do we find this a challenging text to us? Well, I think the first thing is that it seems to imply that the majority of people in our world are heading down the wrong road. This is the Kathmandu intersection. It's a terrible city for traffic, especially if you're trying to cycle through it. But there's so many people, according to Jesus, traveling down the wrong road. And surely so many people can't be wrong, can they? I think we've given up on the clicker. Okay. And what about those who seem so innocent? Surely God is going to be fair to them. What about our young people? It makes me worried about them. What kind of routes are they going to choose in their lives? Are they going to make the right choices in their lives? Okay. Douglas? Is that me or you? Oh, we're working now, yeah. Okay, good. Right, what about people who don't seem to have any choice to make in their lives? This was a man I met who had suffered from a very severe mental illness for many years. He had spent several years tied up in his village, and you could see the marks on his wrists where the ropes had held him, because the villagers didn't know that there was any treatment available for this particular mental illness. He was being cared for by Christians, but somebody like that, how are they going to make these choices in their lives? It's challenging also because when we read these verses, we think, well, is there a responsibility on me, on us, to tell other people about the narrow road and to guide them onto it? And this is the lady who looked after me for 6 years, traveling about a mile each way to my house on foot to cook for me and wash for me and look after me generally. And this is her son and daughter-in-law. And they are people who have worked for Christians for many, many years. They know all about Jesus and the gospel, and yet they are not Christians. And what are we to make of people like this? Have we failed them in some way? And what about people that you come across who are very devout? Nepal is an extremely religious country. Many people are Buddhists and Hindus. It is the home of Buddhism, in fact. What about the people who built that temple on the left over many years to honor their gods? What about the old man, the Lama, the Buddhist priest who came over to see us as we passed through, came over to touch us each on our foreheads and to bless us, and to whom we gave an apple? What about him and his choices? What about the man on the right who's spending a month making each of these detailed Buddhist paintings, mandalas, and who's showing his devotion through his work? What will happen to them? And lastly, it's challenging, I think, because why is the road that we have to travel if we choose to follow Christ? Why is it so difficult? Why is it so restricted? Why is it so hard? And I suppose that the final challenge to us is to think, well, in fact, am I on the right road? Am I on the narrow road at all, or am I deluding myself? The three of us found on one occasion, one of the nights we were staying in a hotel, that we were put in a room a long way away from everybody else in the group. It turned out the number of the room was room 101, which was slightly worrying that we were going to be cast into the outer darkness. When we're faced with challenging verses, I think it's important to stand back from them and look at them in context. The context of the passage, of course, is the Sermon on the Mount. So it's the most important collection put together of Jesus' teaching in one place. But if we look at the verse on its own without looking at the full context of the Bible, then, as we know, a text without a context can be a pretext. Apparently, this verse was one of the favorite verses in the Bible of Gandhi. Gandhi loved the Sermon on the Mount, and he took the meaning of this verse to be that the way of nonviolence was the way that we should take, the narrow way. But I think it means much more than that. And the other context we have to look at is, what would the original hearers of what Jesus said have made of it? Although we can't necessarily put ourselves back in the shoes of first century people in Israel, what I think we can do, especially if we've lived in a developing country, is look at the passage through the eyes of people who live in a culture much closer to that of first century Palestine. And I believe that for Nepali people, Nepali Christians, that it's much easier for them to understand the Bible than it is for us. So Christians that I know in Tansen, if they were thinking about this, these words of Jesus and the wide gate, would perhaps think of the gate in Tansen, the Muldoka, known as the biggest gate in Nepal, the gate that is built so wide so that the king of Palpa could drive through with his carriage. He could go through on top of his elephant if he wished to. And when they were thinking of the narrow gates, they would think of the little wooden houses, mud houses they live in, the little wooden gates into them. And they might think, if they were living near the hospital, of the gate into the hospital on the left, where you have to come through a gate and persuade the man at the gate that you have to a good reason to get into the hospital. And we'll miss out the picture of the toilet, which has another story attached to it. I wonder if it is easier for Nepali people in general to come in through the narrow gate. You may remember that Jesus told a story about another narrow aperture through which it was going to be extremely difficult for a camel to pass. And that was the eye of a needle. And he said it would be easier for the camel to come in through that than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. And if you live in one of the poorest countries of the world, then not many people are wealthy, and perhaps it is easier for them in their poverty to come through such a door. So what exactly is this door that Jesus is talking about? I think the best way to understand it is to take Jesus saying in John, where he describes himself as the door for the sheep. Twice he says, "I am the door." So if you say, "Why is the door narrow?" then you could reply to that, it is only the width of the cross of Christ, because it is only through the cross of Christ that people can enter. And I'm trying at the moment in my amateur attempts at painting to draw a picture of the cross of Christ being made out of a tree and then being turned afterwards into a door frame. Is there an option for us to ignore these two ways and find some other way around this difficulty? This is a gate in Tansen through which no one needs to pass because everybody just walks around about it, which is much easier. But Jesus doesn't give a third option. He says you must choose between one way or the other. Just as Susan mentioned, you must choose to build on rock or on sand. There's only two choices. But it is a free choice. No one is forced to go down one way or the other. We all freely choose, the Bible assures us. As someone has said, hell is always a state for which a person opts. No one travels to destruction except those who choose to do so. This is the gates into the outpatient department at the hospital I used to work in. There's only one way to get in to see the doctor inside, and that is to line up and get your ticket on the right there, then go in and sit and be called in through the door. There's only one way through. And just as people don't necessarily know who it is that gave them the ticket, so it is with people who do go through the door. It is Jesus who provides them with the way through the door, even if they do not recognize him who gave them the ticket. So Jesus said, "Go in by the narrow gate, for the wide gate has a broad road which leads to disaster, and there are many people going that way. The narrow gate and the hard road lead out into life, and only a few are finding it." When we look in our country, it does seem very obvious that very few are finding it. The good news is that in countries like Nepal, the church is flourishing and growing fast. From a population of Christians of zero in 1950, there are now varying estimates, but perhaps 500,000 Christians in the country. So many people are choosing to ignore that broad way in the middle and going round the side and going through the narrow gates as a side, just as we on our bicycles and the buses here had to avoid the broad, narrow way. I'm not quite sure how this fits into the talk, but I can't help showing you this lorry Lorries are highly painted in Nepal and often carry good luck symbols to ensure a safe journey for the drivers. It seemed somewhat ironic, therefore, to find that this driver had commissioned a painting of the Titanic. And now another little video, perhaps. Another problem with the travelling by the broad roads in Nepal is that people are very influenced by religion. And you can see a temple there on the left dedicated to the god Ganesh, as you will see. That's fine, Douglas. And as we travel down that road, it's a road I've traveled down many times over the years, most people in the bus or taxi will put their hand to their head as a sign of respect to the god of that temple. And people are very religious. People were very religious in Jesus' day as well. And in fact, religion is one of the main barriers to going through the narrow gate. May God preserve us from being religious people. Jesus said, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You shut the kingdom of heaven in men's faces. You yourselves do not enter, nor will you let those enter who are trying to." This is another video. Again, I'm not quite sure how this fits into the theme, but this is just showing you the traffic in the evening at a busy intersection. Interestingly, the policewoman on the left seems unconcerned about the state and happily waves us through. Yes, go on through the wide road. It'll be perfectly safe. What can possibly go wrong? Okay, thank you, Douglas. Our bike ride was marked by being devoid of any significant injuries or illnesses, which was great. The only bike accident that I suffered was when walking down this nice, quiet street, which was completely pedestrianized, and this little boy on his bicycle, not looking where he was going, managed to run into me and knock me down. The dangers of the broad road. Jeremiah said in a similar way to Jesus, he gave this challenge to people, "Look, I set before you the way of life and the way of death." In the same way, Jesus' choice seems to be a matter of life and death. We have to look at these two paths. We look at the well-established ancient path on the left there, well-trodden for centuries by people going over the hills of Nepal. And we look also at the brand new road built only last year and have to decide which is the best one to take. This was a walk that we went on. And you can see that within 1 year, the brand new wide road has started to crumble. And in next year's monsoon, it will almost certainly wash away that section. So we have to think, should we choose the well-trusted but narrow way? Nepali people understand this very well, since most of their lives are spent walking. And Jesus lived in a time when the culture was to walk everywhere. It's been estimated that Jesus probably walked about 10,000 miles in his lifetime, even though he restricted his life to a very, very tiny corner of the earth. This was a walk I did with some friends. It doesn't look a very safe or inviting road, this narrow road, but it did lead out into a beautiful place where we visited a palace of a previous king there. And Jesus said that the narrow road leads out into life. But this narrow road is so often an uphill struggle for us. Why people on the bike ride kept complaining, "Oh no, another hill," and people were dreading the next climb they would have to do. But perhaps we shouldn't be surprised that the Christian life can be an uphill struggle. I like to quote from C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity when he's talking about counting the cost. He says, we must not be surprised if we are in for a rough time. When a man turns to Christ and seems to be getting on pretty well, in the sense that some of his bad habits are now corrected, he often feels that it would now be natural if things went fairly smoothly. When troubles come along, illnesses, money troubles, new kinds of temptation, he is disappointed. These things he feels might have been necessary to rouse him at the beginning and make him repent in his bad old days. But why now? Because God is forcing him on or up to a higher level, putting him into situations which he will have to be very much braver than before, or more patient than before, or more loving than ever he dreamed of being before. It seems to us all unnecessary, but that is because we have not yet had the slightest notion of the tremendous thing that he means us to be. Can't see my watch. Oh, there's a clocker. There's a clock up there. Jesus seems to say that few people find this road, and it seems that effort is required to find it. Susan, I think, alluded to that, that effort is required to achieve anything worthwhile. Surely it's not that God makes it difficult to find the narrow gate and the narrow path, and yet it's something that can seem so obvious to us can seem so difficult for others to find. While there, we visited a jungle area where we were told there were many types of wild animals to see, including rhinoceros. Well, we traveled from before dawn in this jeep through the jungle for 2 hours and didn't see any rhinoceros. But eventually, just before the end of our journey safari, looking out the side of the jeep, suddenly, oops, that's the jeep moving. Didn't realize it would move. Suddenly, we saw a rhinoceros, or hippopotamus, as I keep calling it, but you know, it was definitely a rhinoceros. So our effort was worthwhile, and Jesus says, ask, and the sense is, ask and keep asking, and you will receive. Seek and keep seeking, and you will find. Knock, and the door will be opened to you. The narrow road has many byways and to take us off and tempt us away from where we should be going. In this village we passed through, I was amused by the signs at the roadside. It didn't appear as though we were traveling through a red light district, and yet the sign said, Lassie available here. One of our cyclists decided to stand beside it to get a picture for her husband. However, as you may know, if you visit Indian restaurants, that a lassi is a very delicious yogurt drink, which I can highly recommend. And in case you were any doubt about the lassi, chat was also available here. So it was obviously only for chat. Chat, in fact, means a savory snack. The other dangers are of things like overconfidence. We had one person in our group, Troy, from Canberra in Australia, who is much, much fitter than the rest of us. And when we were cycling up one hill, he would have already cycled up it, gone back down, and was cycling up it again. However, he was the only one to have any injuries due to his cycling. On the very last day of cycling, the doctor who was with us said, look, I haven't had any work to do so far, so please don't spoil it all by trying to go down this hill too fast. However, within the next half hour, Troy had fallen 3 times, once over the handlebars and 2 slipping on diesel on the road. So there's a danger of us being overconfident, and perhaps the sayings that challenge us from Jesus are designed not to make us overconfident. And the narrow road, although it reaches to a safe haven in the end, is not without the same share of natural disasters and illnesses that anyone will suffer on any road through life. When I stayed in the guest house in Tansen, I noticed on the wall this notice which I've never before seen in my life, warning of earthquakes. It was written in 2005, and in fact, in 2015, 10 years later, there was an earthquake. So I did look around as recommended for my nearest earthquake kit and crowbar, but found them sadly lacking. So we are not immune to these difficulties. And we are traveling with the bodies that we have been given and with the brains and the emotions and everything that we have been given. We complain quite a lot about the gears on our bicycles, which would continually make strange noises and slip from one gear to another and make it hard to get up the hills. And we might wonder, why is our life so difficult? Why have we got so many problems? Well, I'd like to quote again from C.S. Lewis. You can tell he's one of my favorite authors, possibly the most quoted Christian author of all time. And I do hope we can come up with another C.S. Lewis sometime soon. Why is the Christian life such a struggle? C.S. Lewis, commentating on the first verse in the Sermon on the Mount, "Blessed are the poor in spirit," said to people who feel they are inadequate for the task, "If you are a poor creature, poisoned by your upbringing, saddled with some perversion, nagged by an inferiority complex, or something like that, do not despair. Christ knows all that. He knows what a wretched machine you're trying to drive," just like the bicycles. "He knows what a wretched machine you're trying to drive. Keep on, do what you can. One day he will fling it on the scrap heap." That's the bicycle, not you. "One day he will fling it on the scrap heap and give you a new one. And then you may astonish us all, not least yourself, for you have learned to drive in a hard school." It can be so hard that we feel like giving up, and many times people get off their bikes and push them up the hills, and they needed the encouragement from each other to keep us going. We should not feel surprised that in our Christian lives we may feel like giving up, because the people who followed Jesus also felt that way. Jesus, when many turned back from following him, said to the 12 disciples, "Would you also like to leave?" "Lord," they replied, "to whom would we go? You have the words that give eternal life, so don't give up." Perhaps you feel exhausted, just lying down, giving up, sleeping. Remember that Jesus, who has gone before us on this road, also came near to that in the Garden of Gethsemane, when faced with the ultimate choice of submitting to death or not, he almost pleaded with God that there might be some other way to avoid it. "Father, there has to be some easier way." And he sweated blood faced with how to make that decision. The future of all humanity hung in that moment. But he has gone before and he has made that right choice. And that should encourage us to make the difficult choices. One more, hopefully. But Jesus did choose that right way and has opened for us a new and living way through his sacrifice. And when we go through our lives and when we come to the end of our lives, we have a sure and certain way to cross the boundary and go into that land that he has prepared for us, to move from this world into what in Narnia books is called Aslan's country, to that other world. Jesus is the door. Jesus is the way. In fact, Jesus is the way through. He's the door that we see in Narnia, a bit like the door that leads from this world to Narnia through the wardrobe. But he is also that other gate that we meet at the end of the book about the last battle, where all the animals and creatures of Narnia come. And they look at Aslan, and all look at Aslan. Some look in fear and trembling and terror and turn away and choose not to go through the gate. The others look at Aslan, and they look and they love him. And Aslan welcomes him in, come in to the kingdom of heaven that is prepared for us. May God help us to make good choices in our lives, to choose to find the narrow way, to help others to find it, and to rejoice that we too are going to go through that gate into that other world. Amen.